Welcome to the Exposing Mold podcast, where I, Keely Severson, Eric Johnson, and Alicia Swamy are exposing mold. Today we have the pleasure to talk to Dr. McCarter.
Welcome, Dr. Stephanie McCarter. It's a pleasure to host you. Dr. McCarter is board certified in internal medicine and is a member of the American College of Physicians and the Alpha Omega Alpha Medical Society. She graduated from Indiana University School of Medicine in 1993 and from Pepperdine University in 1989. She currently serves as an internal medicine and environmental medicine physician at the Environmental Health Center of Dallas. She has 13 years of experience in the field of environmental medicine and has even built her own eco-friendly, low EMF home, working with well-known experts in healthy house building. She has lectured on environmental medicine in the areas of indoor and outdoor air quality, avoiding pollutants in air, food, and water, evaluation and treatment of electromagnetic field sensitivity, and on preparing antigens for provocation neutralization immunotherapy. Dr. Carter has been acknowledged for her work on Dr. William Ray's book, Reversibility of Chronic Degenerative Disease and Hypersensitivity. She has extensive experience with electromagnetic sensitivity at many conferences and symposiums. She believes that the body is an energetically open system that is exchanging energy and materials with its surrounding environment and must be treated as such to achieve total wellness. She strongly believes that such treatment should be of the whole body, mind, and spirit.
Dr. McCarter, you work at Dr. Rhea's clinic, is that correct?
Right, it's Environmental Health Center of Dallas.
Would you mind telling us a little bit about what brought your interest into environmental medicine and how you hooked up with Dr. Rhea's clinic?
Sure, so Dr. Ray was world-renowned. He started the center 40 years ago, and he helped multiple people in other parts of the world, set up centers. He was a pioneer. And as an internist, as most doctors, family practice interns, we get out in the field and we're just medicating people. And so the question is, I'm seeing all these young people with cancer, this is back in the 90s and early 2000s. And it's like, what's going on in the environment? Maybe there's something in the environment. And so I heard about this doctor in Dallas. And around the same time, we had moved into a house that we thought was our dream house, and the French drains were plugged and our basement flooded. And so I started getting sensitive to things, and I went to a lot of doctors, and it's the same scenario. You get steroids, you get medications, antihistamines, and the problem continued to get worse. So it's very interesting because I was starting to look into this, alternative medicine, environmental medicine, because everything I learned was pharmaceuticals. And someone at my church said, you should go check out this center in Dallas. And so I called Dr. Ray, and just the first phone call, he was asking me questions that I'd never learned to think about, even in med school or be trained in. So I got down here, and it just opened my whole, changed my life. Like, I will never practice medicine, the same.
We need more doctors like you. Can you give us a little insight to some of the questions that they ask that help open your eyes? Because you said they were asking things that you're not even trained to ask in medical school.
Right. So what we do is we, ask about symptoms. We do a history and physical, but we don't ask about environmental history. Like, what kind of things are you using in your home? Where did you grow up? Did you grow up near pesticides? Did you grow up near cornfields, herbicides? Are you experiencing any, difference when you go into places that are musty? I mean, none of that is really what we're trained in. And so, environmental history is so important because I always tell patients it's kind of like a grain of sand. We accumulate as our life goes on. And then Dr. Ray was really big on the total body load. He'd show a picture of the barrel. And when that barrel's full, every little thing starts to bother people. And unfortunately, that's what we do as doctors, is we hear these symptoms and we do blood tests. And most of the blood tests that we do don't really show any problems, because those blood tests, as Dr. Ray would say, are going to show something when you have a fixed name disease. So we're doing something that's more, before that happens. And so that's been really helpful, just to learn how to look at what's accumulating in the body, what has been the trend with this person's life. Because what happens is the detox mechanism, as people get older, start to have problems. And there is some genetic susceptibilities. Different people have MTHFR and different, genetic SNPs. But I'm a big believer in, the gut health, and the gut bacteria have like 9 million genes and our body has 23,000, but it is important. And there's a lot more with nutritional therapy that we're learning, you know, to help guide that, you know, when people have difficulty with the detox pathway. So it's like a whole nother world, right? That we're learning. And so, yeah, that's been super helpful.
I read about Dr. Ray's clinic in a book by Arnold Mann.
Uh-huh.
And they described some interesting things that I'd like to ask you about. One of the things was how patients who come to the clinic, they have actually a special part of the hotel where they stay.
We do not have that hotel anymore. It's so unfortunate.
Oh, you
do? Yeah, but okay. We do have a partnership with actually a husband of a patient who was dedicated to helping patients, and he has made cottages outside of Dallas that are eco-friendly. Because now with 4G, 5G, that's a whole nother problem we're having, you know, because people who get mold exposure will become more sensitive. And there's other exposures that make you more sensitive, heavy metals, you know, chemicals. And so we also have some condos that they also have here in Dallas that are eco-friendly. And so what Dr. Seymour, who bought the practice, this practice has done is she has bought a building that we will have as our own freestanding building that's eco-friendly with property to start building housing for patients. So
that is a really big need.
It's really exciting because, as I said, with the 4G, 5G, Dallas has got a lot of 5G. People don't even know. I mean, Dr. Ray told me 10 years ago, this is your tobacco. You're going to have to get on top of this because he said, this is going to happen. And he said, he always talked about the cell membrane. You know, everybody, your cell membrane is electrical. And so it's very important for that to stay stable. And so different things will cause that to fluctuate and be unstable. And mold exposure is one of them. And then chemicals. And unfortunately, most people are exposed to all of these. And then heavy metals. So you think about, you know, there's aluminum in the environment now. Vaccines are full of aluminum and mercury. And then you got the silver fillings that were put in, you know, and they've been continued to be put in. But anyway, so all of that is part of this problem.
Oh, that was all great information. Thank you so much for sharing that. And it was right in line with what we were asking. I didn't actually finish the question. I was going to ask a question about the hotels, but I'll gloss over that. And I have one question, and then I'll turn it over to Alicia and Eric. Well, what I read, and I don't know if this is still a current practice, what I had read is there's this period of when new patients come near you that they're, you know, they may stay somewhere for a couple days before testing to become unmasked so that their tests might be more accurate for how their body responds. And I just wanted to know, like, what is the time frame that you see for allowing people to maybe be in like a clear space with no exposures before you would run the test for best results?
So what Dr. Ray did is he used to have a unit and he used to have people fast for 72 hours. It was like a hospital wing and it was all environmentally friendly. And we don't have that now, but what I have found is everyone's different. So we actually have people come here and they'll start doing sauna and some IV nutrients because they don't wield very well when we do skin testing. Our skin testing actually is different from allergy testing. So we help people, you know, as a treatment. But if their immune system is really suppressed or having difficulty, we start them on a detox program. So honestly, we don't usually have to have people wait. You know, they can come here and start doing the treatment because this facility is so environmentally friendly. It's 5 times lower levels of any kind of chemicals. You bring a VOC meter in here, there is nothing that you can measure. And so the body immediately starts going into detox because you've taken that barrel and that load and you've brought it way down. So what that's happened a lot. So people, I mean, they can try that before they leave, you know, and come here, but a lot of times they really need to be here and we can start treating them because what we're seeing, unfortunately, is I'm seeing more and more sicker people. And honestly, we have to bypass the gut. We have to give them nutrients through IVs and oxygen. And that needs to be done in a way that we have, you know, basically perfected through Dr. Ray. And when they do that, sometimes we even have to skin test and desensitize them to the IV ingredients. So we have saunas here and they're a controlled environment as well. And then we have the tile saunas and the hardwood saunas with the infrared. And some people cannot jump into infrared. So we always tell people to come because that's where we figure out, and that's what happens. I've had a lot of patients, they'll go get all their fillings out or they'll go do an infrared and they get super sick because their body, their detox mechanism, their pathways aren't open yet. And so that needs to be monitored. So,
thank you so much for answering that. Alicia and Eric, do you have any questions for Dr. McCarter?
Yes, I'm just so happy that you're here. And just listening to everything that you're saying is making me so excited, because I know that our audience, our listenership, they're desperate because a lot of their primary care doctors do not understand this. They don't Correct. Have environmental questions in their questionnaires when they're intaking patients. And so, you know, a lot of doctors don't even understand. They don't even recognize. And me being a patient, when I was going through my mold issues, I was mm-hmm. just, you know, made to feel like I'm hysteric. You know, right. It's hysterics. You, it's all in your mind. Mm-hmm. So thank you for the validation that these are issues, first and right. foremost. And then second, so you mentioned that you do some testing. And I just wanted to know, what is the group of testing that you take patients through in order to verify that they have some environmental sensitivities?
So that's the nice thing about what we do, is that a lot of doctors who are in this field, they treat the mast cell, the histamine release, and people talk about mast cell syndrome. And that's basically what we're doing, is we're looking at those triggers that are causing that. And so we will test the different triggers. We start actually with histamine, serotonin, and capsaicin, which are your neurotransmitters that are all through your brain, your gut, and that really is usually completely out of balance. And so some doctors will, you know, do different antihistamines. People come here loaded with antihistamines, and that's helpful and that's important. And if you can't do what we're doing, that's going to help, because that is an important step before you start actually treating with like an antifungal or some, you know, binders, because that's what a lot of people will also prescribe that are more familiar with this, is binders like charcoal and clay. But what we do is we do the histamine serotonin so we can kind of calm that down. So the way provocation works is that the higher that we have to go to keep, we dilute the antigen or histamine or the mold, and we keep diluting it on, and making a wheel on the skin until the person stops reacting. So the wheel stops and their symptoms stop. And the beauty of this is that provocation actually affects the nervous system. So when they're skin testing, it'll reproduce different symptoms that they're having. Like you were talking about, like brain fog, or, you know, their heart's racing. And then we keep diluting it until it stops. And then that becomes the treatment dose. Because the way it works is Dr. Ray studied these two physiologists, Dr. Heine and Dr. Pissinger, and they figured out that this whole network of our skin is not just a, you know, holding this together. It's an autonomic nervous system communication system. So when I got here, I was like, wow, why do we not do this in allergy treatment? And Dr. Ray was like, well, because 80% of the time people just do the regular skin prick on the back. And that's just, you know, basically a whole concentrate of whatever it is. And I know from my experience that the allergists put these on my back and they said, wow, your whole back is lit up like a Christmas tree. And I couldn't tolerate those shots. They were too strong. So, you know, so that's really helpful. And so that's how we do that. And we can do, you know, other things too. Like we do foods and we do pollen. And then that whole barrel, that whole load comes up. A lot of people have implants, metals. So we're able to do all of that to help, you know, get their load down.
Great. Thank you for that. And one thing that you mentioned while you were talking, and this is something that we see in our education outreach groups, of everyone kind of recommending binders, you know, that's always right. The first thing to go to. And we had Dr. Andrew Campbell on the other day, toxicologist, microbiologist, and he was telling us, well, why does binders work for some and why, you know, it doesn't work for other people? So can you speak to that and why you think that is?
Right. So the binders are going in and they're affecting any mycotoxins or, you know, even chemicals that are trapped in the liver and they're in the bile, and it gets, you know, the bile gets reuptake through this small intestine back into the liver. So a person keeps recycling it. So the binders come in and grab onto that and help them get rid of it. And what I have found is some people are just so overloaded that they cannot handle that release, right? And their gut is, I always tell patients, your gut is your gutter and your liver is the detoxer, right? It's getting the poisons out. And those little mycotoxins are like ionophores. They're so tiny. So people have a lot of those trapped in their liver and they don't even realize it. So when they release and say they're reactive, so like a mycotoxin, which we also skin test, or a mold, if you go higher and higher and higher on that skin testing, that's 5 times diluted. So that means when they release it, they're seeing that, they're reacting to it. So I think part of that is the reaction itself. And same thing with pesticides, people will start to detox and their nervous system is so unstable. But I find that you got to work on that gut flora. There's so much yeast and things in there. So they can't process when that binder comes through. And some people are allergic to the binders, you know, to the charcoal and to the clays. And so I'm also a big fan of colon therapy. And some people have to start with enemas. So if you release, because you got to remember the colon is the secret, I think, to health. And if you've been in a lot of mold, you've got a lot of yeast in there, you've got a lot of gliotoxins. And so I tell patients, you know, we're going to start real slow. But I learned that from a 105-year-old doctor who was, you know, a big proponent of colonics, and he looked amazing. And he said, you know, in our 21st century environment, you have to do a bulldozer. You have to get in there. But again, there's so much going on in the gut, so many neurotransmitters, peptides, all these things. Sometimes it's just too much for these patients. So like that barrel just goes overflowing just from detox. So we go real slow with that. But that's been a big help. I've seen my patients who cannot do binders. We start with enemas, you know, with the drinking water, because your water has to be drunk and then go all the way to your colon to be absorbed. So you're getting hydration of the cells immediately. And then we just go real slow with that. And then eventually that, oh, it's amazing when you can get the liver just to do it that way naturally.
So do you guys actually have like colon hydrotherapy, you know, the whole apparatus in your clinic too?
We do not, but we're planning to. Yeah, because we've got some great therapists in our area.
Oh man, I mean, yeah. I almost want to come visit tomorrow. I'm going to be knocking on your door. So another question that I had was, so from point A to, you know, finish line to the end, how long does it usually take patients to go through this program and see some sort of a difference in the way that they feel?
So every patient's different. I just want to remind people of that. Some people, they're, you know, they're not as sensitive. They respond really fast. Other people, it takes them a much longer time because they, like I said, if they have to get IV nutrients and we have to kind of bypass the gut, that's going to take a longer time. Most patients come here 2 weeks and wish they'd come for three. But a lot of people will come for 2 weeks and then come back. And that's another thing I wanted to mention. So what we do is we look at the immune system, and doctors don't look at that part, right? They look at a CBC, a white blood count, and they say, oh, you're fine. We look at the T cell mediated immunity. So we look at T cells and B cells. So we have all these, you know, CD3s, your master T cells, and then you've got your helper cells, and then you've got your killer cells. And those are really important for fighting mold illness and yeast and viruses. And then you've got the IgG subsets, which are your, you know, helping you fight bacteria. And what we find when people are in mold is those, it's like the wings of an airplane, they're both down. And so we take a substance that Dr. Ray patented like 30 years ago. We take the blood of a patient and we're able to grow that blood, and then all your weak cells die off. So after 6 weeks, you have these really strong cells, and he figured out that the cell cycle is really messed up in people, and all of those factors are in that healthy blood help reset it and desensitize you. And he calls it autogenous lymphocytic factor. I tell people it's kind of like stem cell in a way, but it's got a lot of great information. It has been a huge help for our patients. You know, people do like a thymic protein or something like that, and that's kind of where he got the idea. So a lot of times patients will come for a couple of weeks and then they'll come back when their alpha is ready. Because sometimes we dilute it 1 to 10, but sometimes we have to dilute it 1 to 1,000,000. And it, you know, if the person's super sensitive. But I tell people it's kind of like the breakers are off in the house. All of a sudden the alpha is like putting those breakers back online. And so that's another really great thing we can do. And we also try to get people set up for oxygen, because Von Arndt was a doctor that Dr. Ray visited in Germany. He's a physicist, and he wrote a book called Multi-Step Oxygen Therapy. And he did all these experiments during World War II where he figured out that the microcirculation gets inflamed in people. And so you're not extracting oxygen at that level. So doctors, unfortunately, we're trained, you know, if your lips are pink, you're good. You don't need oxygen. But what we found is that the venous level of coming back to your heart of oxygen is high, then you have this inflammation going on in your small blood vessels. So what Dr. Von Arndt found out is that if you do 2 hours a day of oxygen, like 6 to 8 liters, that microcirculation, it's swollen, will open up. It's like a switch. And so we start patients on that. And interestingly, we have like the big metal tanks, and we've adapted it to a ceramic mask and Tigon tubing and a rebreather bag made out of cellulose, because you get oxygen, you get all those VOCs and plastics when you get the tubing and all of that stuff attached to it. So we've set that up so patients can do that when they go home, and we get them started here. So it's another big tool that we have.
Thank you for that, Dr. McCarter. I'm going to go ahead and pass it on over to Eric, see what he has to ask.
I think I've met you before, Eric.
Could be. I've certainly been around. So there's a lot of controversy about the dreaded toxic black mold, Stachybotrys chartarum. Do you see a lot of that in your practice?
Yes, we do. We do. We actually see, with real-time labs, you know, and Great Plains also does the mycotox, we have seen a lot more aspergillus, and then trichothecines have definitely come up. But I'm seeing all of them, like aspergillus, ochratoxin, the aflatoxin. We see a lot of people with that. And then Fusarium, you know, puts out the zearalenone mycotoxin that affects the hormones. So I'm seeing a whole array of that. And then I see patients that, you know, when they get the binders, and Dr. Campbell may have talked about this, if they can, you know, get to the point where they're tolerating that, But even sauna, I see the mycotoxins going up in the urine, so they're clinically better and they're getting rid of them. And then what's interesting is they'll get rid of the aspergillus and trichothecines, you know, the aflatoxin, aflatoxin from aspergillus, and then their gliotoxin goes up. And so I think there's a, you know, there's some reconversion back to the yeast in the gut. So as they continue to do that, they get rid of that one too. So it's, yeah, we see a lot of all of them.
So this project of having safe cottages out in a pristine location is terrific. I mean, everybody wants to have a trustworthy environment, but do they have to live that way for the rest of their lives?
Well, what I have learned and is that it's very helpful because of all the 4G, 5G, and everything going on in our environment. Our 21st century environment is getting so toxic that we are really preaching that. You know, make your home as clean as possible, lower the EMF exposures. And, you know, patients will say, well, I can't get out of this moldy house. Well, we tell them, you know, try to get one room really good because, you know, if you have an air filter, your bedroom is so important, right? Because your bedroom, you sleep there and your body detoxes. That's where our body's trying to like catch up. And so I'm always telling patients, yeah, I think it's really important because then you go out in the world and you can function even at a higher level. You know, people say, well, I'm getting old. I'm getting, you know, senior moments. We don't believe in that. And I love Dr. Dale Bredesen. He's the guy that, you know, has written the book, End of Alzheimer's. He's saying the same thing. You know, he gets these patients better that have Alzheimer's and he's like, it's the environment. And as soon as they change their environment and they don't do sauna or they don't do their supplements, again, they start going backwards. And I did that personally. You know, Dr. Ray said to me, you know, build yourself an eco-friendly house. Luckily I did it outside the city and it was, you know, a real task, but he told me it is worth it in the end, and my kids will attest to that. I mean, it's amazing. And now I notice it even more because, you know, these big cities are getting so much electrosmog. I go out in the city, and I can tell a huge difference. And we're having more and more documentation of that as well, you know, the oxidative stress. So it's coming from all these things. So, yeah, until we start waking up about our environment, I think it's really important to have that sanctuary, Eric.
What do you think the greatest problem is, the resistance of the mainstream doctors to accepting environmental illness as a major factor?
I think it's ignorance, and it's also the huge amount of influence of the pharmaceutical industry on allopathic medicine. Everything that you read, because I mean, I'm board certified and I keep up with all of my medical, you know, internal medicine practice, and everything in the journals is pharmaceutically based, and you know, I think it's mostly that it's unfortunate, but that's the factor. You know, you're kind of, when I was in med school, that was like my whole second year of med school was pharmacology. And I remember thinking, whoa, this is interesting. You know, kind of light bulb was going on. But then you get kind of reinforced because when you're training in the hospital, people are very, very ill. So guess what? The drugs work. They have to have something, right? It's like Dr. Reese said, they've got the fixed name diseases. So they have to have something to do that. So that just reinforces in their mind. So yeah, you're seeing people that, you know, and unfortunately we're not trained. We're not trained to look at why. So then when the things don't work out, we say, oh, it's idiopathic. We don't know why, you know? So that's the unfortunate thing. But I think more and more doctors are becoming open. More and more doctors are going into functional medicine and becoming educated, naturopathic medicine, and because they're getting frustrated, right? And I think it's because Dr. Ray and I spoke about this before he passed, is that, you know, there's 220 implants now. I see young people with all kinds of implants, more than just one, and the population's getting sicker. And so, like he said, the drugs, you got all the pollutants, you got all this mold. He said, the drugs aren't going to hold. They're not going to continue to keep that cell membrane stable. So that's what I think is happening.
I heard a rumor that Dr. Rhea had a HEPA filter installed in the trunk of his car.
No. No, but he had a filter in his car. He did have a car filter. Yeah, and I think those are wonderful, especially if people live in big cities and there's all this, you know, pollution. And I always tell patients, there's an app you can get on your phone called Plume, P-L-U-M-E. That's a great little app to look at. It shows you the current, you know, levels of nitric oxide and particulate matters and all that. And I can tell, like when I come into Dallas, I'll keep my air filter. I have a little car filter, and that's because I learned from him, you know. And it really is nice because if it's not on or I don't have my recirc on, you smell that car exhaust. And again, it's that total load. So the more you keep that total load down, the more your body can function at an optimal level.
And what do you do about cross-contamination or exposures where people go into a really bad building and get drenched with toxic mold they've got on their hair, in their clothes, all their possessions? So what's the procedure for controlling that?
So, right. So people will, that's a great question, because people will typically find out they're being poisoned from the mold and they're like, I'm getting out of this house, take all their stuff with them, and then recontaminate the next house. And so we teach patients, don't do that. Put it in storage. You know, if you think there's things that you can clean up, hard surfaces, you know, things that have hard surfaces, you're going to be able to pretty much clean up with peroxide, high percentage peroxide and different things. But as far as soft, you know, mycotoxins just get into that stuff. And when patients desensitize and clear out, it's like that barrel gets down, they start to notice it more, right? They notice, oh, wow, that thing's loaded with mold. Because I tell people, it's like your pig pen from Charlie Brown. You're full of it, but then as that goes away, you start, you're noticing, oh, wow, that was full of mold. And that. So unfortunately, when they don't, you know that, they put all that stuff in the new house, and those little mycotoxins get in all those soft materials. So I tell patients, if you're really attached to something, just put it all in storage. But your hard surfaces, you usually can, you know, be able to clean it up. And the other thing I wanted to mention from your question that's important is that patients will say, well, I'm going to a brand new house. I'm going into a brand new place. And you got all the new carpet, all the new chemicals from the paints, and all those VOCs. And these patients already have a detox mechanism in their pathways that aren't working well. So guess what? You absorb all those chemicals, and then they get sicker. So, yeah, just cautioning people about that, because that, you know, people don't know that.
I think it's great that you say to put everything in storage, because you never know what's going to be cleanable in the future.
Well, that happened to me. I actually had some clothes that I was really attached to, some things, and I put them in, you know, plastic bags and things, and put them in storage. And then eventually I got some of those things out, and I was able to wash them multiple times. Sunlight is a fantastic way to break down mycotoxins and mold, just put it in the sun. But there were some things there was no way, like paper and books and things like that. You're just going to probably want to scan them and get rid of them, because they're just too difficult to decontaminate.
I wound up putting a lot of stuff in storage and had other people try the same, and found that, amazingly enough, without any cleaning at all, the most ferocious toxins died down after 5 years.
Okay.
There been any studies to find out just what the half-life of these toxins is?
No, I just know that the UV light seems to be very helpful. Because that, you know, I'm in Texas, so it was like, I had some things, and I was like you. I was like, I'm just going to put it out in the sun, you know, summer after summer. And sure enough, some of those things were able to be, I was able to recollect that. So, but Dr. Campbell would probably know. I don't know if there have any studies yet on that.
Yeah, I tried all kinds of different cleaning methods, the harsh chemicals.
Yes.
And finally realized that the sun worked better than anything.
Oh, that's a great question, Eric, a great comment. I want to mention the fact that people will go have their house remediated, and they'll have company use certain chemicals, and like Benefact is thyme oil, and that's great if you're not sensitive to it. And some people, it's like it aired out and they're fine. Other people are like, I can't go back in there. I'm so sensitive to that. And so it's really important to check into what the remediators are planning to use. And so I know some patients, the peroxide, and then we have, you know, Larry Schwartz and Mike Schrantz. They're really good. They're people that do, you know, they're in the field of this, and they can tell. But I had a patient that used glutaraldehyde. They used glutaraldehyde, which is like a formaldehyde product, and she could not go back in her house. I mean, it took years, you know, and they could not get that. She was so sensitive because she was chemically sensitive from her mold exposure.
Do you find that a lot of patients fall prey to remediation tactics that are less than effective?
Yes.
This is a big thing that we're finding too.
Yes. Because they're not looking at moisture meters inside the wall cavities. They're not looking for, you know, because you can look at a room and it looks fine, but if there's, it could be tons of mold behind that wall. The HVAC system, I don't know why, but some patients, you know, the room meter's missing that. Outside, you're not looking at sprinklers hitting the house, flashing at the chimney. So yeah, you really, unfortunately, I tell the patients, you got to kind of follow them around and you know, keep talking to them and making sure they're checking all those different things, because it's missed a lot. You're right, and it's been difficult for us here in Texas to get the right people to help with that. California has some good people.
Some people swear that you can remediate a house using high levels of ozone, and yet. One of the fears that I have is that even if this were possible, that would cause chemicals in the house to volatilize.
Correct.
And your chemical exposure.
Right. You're exactly right. So you can't, I mean, small doses, I know when Dr. Ray had his hospital unit, he had a lot of chemical issues with that house. And I found this with my house with someone that stayed there that had a lot of mold on them. I scrubbed the walls down with some unscented Tide and then ozonate, but not very long. And then, you know, clean it up again. But you have to be careful with ozone because you have to, at some point, have a surfactant or something that you're going to remove that those, you know, that material. You can't just ozonate because then you got the dead, whatever, leftover molds and mycotoxins sitting there. So it's important to have somebody that knows what they're doing, that they're scrubbing it and cleaning that as well after you treat it.
The other issue about testing that gets overlooked a lot of times is that if you test your house, it might be okay. But if your neighbor's house is moldy and you're downwind, if the wind switches around, you'll feel just like you're in a sick house.
Well, most patients that we get, when we treat them, they don't have that sensitivity. They don't have that extreme sensitivity. That's kind of been the peak when the person's first poisoned or, you know, feeling really horrible and their barrel's completely full. But usually, Eric, we don't have that issue. When patients get better, their resistance goes up. You know, the body is, I have learned, I do some work with a doctor in New Zealand, it's called Neuralink, and I've learned that the body is always trying to fix, the brain is super smart, the brain is always trying to fix the body. So when we give it the right tools, the oxygen, you know, different desensitization and IV nutrients and oral nutrients, that system will become resilient and then won't be so, patients won't be so sensitive. There is a component, and they talked about this at the mold conference, is that the limbic brain, it's like PTSD, the limbic brain will kind of get into that stuck cycle of I smell mold and then react, but it's really being driven by an emotion, not physical, because as the body gets physically better, you know, you got to work on that. I love the Annie Hopper and the Gupta programs, but I don't usually start patients on those until I've got them more stable physically, because sometimes I've had patients, sorry about that. So the patients will go to those programs and if they haven't had a lot of physical treatment, they will actually get a little bit worse because they're encouraged to do too much, you know, more than their body can handle.
Do you find that some of these brain retraining programs dissuade people from paying more attention to what's in their environment?
Yes. So it's a balance. It's an interesting balance, right? You have to, like Dr. Ray was kind of extreme, like any little thing, you're going to have to, you know, put yourself back in the bubble. And then you get that almost trained to, you have to be in a bubble 24/7. So it's a balance. Yeah. So I tell patients, you know, let's check your immune system. Let's check how you're doing physically and like, you know, do it in little steps. But yeah, I agree with you.
You probably heard that my major goal is to connect toxic mold with the famous chronic fatigue syndrome.
Uh-huh.
Because this was an overlooked factor in the inception of the syndrome, because at that time, toxic mold wasn't known. The Center for Disease Control and the chronic fatigue syndrome researchers overlooked this.
Yeah.
And once they entered it into their literature, the chronic fatigue syndrome was a virus, from that point on, if you mention mold, they say, well, then that's different from chronic fatigue syndrome.
Yeah, I think that the viral and the Lyme and those are secondary to the toxicity. And I worked with a doctor who was a Lyme specialist for a few years because I was very interested in that. And low-dose therapy for Lyme and Epstein-Barr, which Ty Vincent in Hawaii, you know, has engineered. And I think that's super helpful. But I find that it's secondary to this toxicity issue. So it's really important because a lot of Lyme patients too, they'll be on all these antibiotics and then their gut is completely messed up and they feel great for a couple of years, you know, but then it all goes back to what I said, you know, the microbiome, the colon, the health of that muscle, that's the most important muscle to me in the whole body. And so, yeah, I feel like you can't and so actually Irma Ray is at this med school down in Florida and she has just done a study on 286 people with chronic fatigue syndrome, and 90% of them had mycotoxin. And she just published this. And wow. And it was usually, number one was ochratoxin, but she showed that. And that's the first big study we've had come out, and that the patients actually got better, you know, with their chronic fatigue, with treatment of the mold.
Well, during the Lake Tahoe outbreak, several of us discovered that if we went out to the desert, spent enough time out in the desert, all of our food intolerances disappeared, mm-hmm. with no other effort to correct it.
You lowered that barrel. One of the things I tell people is you have to remember with foods, they go in your body, you eat them, they do cause reactions. And Dr. Ray, when he had his unit figured out, even though you have a bowel movement, there's like 4 days of who knows, different peptides, neurotransmitters, something going on. Each food group actually has a different part of the immune system and affects different enzymes. But when you look at mold is everywhere. right? So when a person's reacting to mold, it's not just in and out of their body. It's everywhere when we go outside. It's how nature rots. So that load goes so down when you're in a low mold environment that, you know, guess what? All of a sudden, the foods aren't going to be filling your barrel so quickly. And so, yeah, that was something that that he talked about quite a bit and that we see. I actually see that with patients that are really sick. We'll work on the building blocks because usually their foods are really, really causing a lot of mast cell release and reactions. And then once we get them more stable on the food antigens and the histamine serotonin, then we add the mold antigens. You know, some people have to do it very slowly because I tell people it's like if you think of a busy highway and you've got all this backed up traffic, all of a sudden you're just opening up tons of pathways and the body immediately goes into, oh, okay, let's detox. And so I noticed that when they start those mold shots, like they're getting better, but when they start those mold shots and really start tolerating them, they start smelling like a mold and it really starts coming out of them. So I always tell patients, this is one of the places that you can come to and we compliment you when you stink.
We used to say it smells like cat piss.
Some people, everyone's different. That's what I've learned too. Everyone is biochemically different.
But the chronic fatigue syndrome researchers are doing vast amounts of research into trying to find some bacteria or some imbalance in the intestines that they can blame. And they're overlooking the fact that if you are excreting mycotoxins and they get into the intestines,
right,
your intestinal microbiota is bound to be disrupted.
Exactly. And that's another thing I wanted to bring up, that we have another little tool that Dr. Ray brilliantly came up with. And that was to take a stool culture and figure out if there's an imbalance of the, which it usually is, of the microbiome. So different bacteria will overgrow. And then what he figured out is that those are the bacteria that the patient's actually reacting to as well. So like an E. coli overgrows or Enterococcus or something. And so we actually take that, sterilize that, and make an antigen and skin test people. And their body's able to naturally balance that in their immune system and get that back in balance. And I've actually done that with a lot of the inflammatory bowel disease like Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, and gotten patients off the Humira and all those immunosuppressants, because that's what the immunosuppressants are doing, right? They're trying to get the immune system to stop reacting. And that's what the disease is. It's the body going, okay, I got to get rid of this. And it's a hyperimmune response that's creating all that inflammation. So that's another awesome thing we have too. And we can do nasal, but usually I find the stool cultures are the most important, right? Because everything overflows from the gut.
It sounds like we need a lot more environmental health centers.
We do. We do.
How many are there in the United States that you may know of?
I think we're the only main one, you know, that where we have the, you know, controlled environment, because we have the filters and we have a room, huge room full of filters, airlocks, you know, all of that. And Dr. Ray created it with porcelain walls. He started with soft porcelain, but people reacted to it. So he did the hard porcelain that was fired at 2000 degrees. So, you know, it's not the most inviting place. And our new center, we're not going to have the porcelain walls, but we're going to have as much inert surfaces to react, you know, everything glass and tile, but it makes such a difference. It's because, you know, it's kind of like people say, well, it's so stark and unfriendly, but your body then gets a break because your nervous system's been overreacting. I know that he helped start a center in Spain and England, Dr. G. Monroe in England. And then there's Dr. Pilar in Spain. And then in Japan, he originally went to Japan. And there's one in South America too. So, yeah.
Wow. I'm trying to get chronic fatigue syndrome researchers to institute one up in Northern Nevada because we've got the perfect environment for it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, Dr. McCarter, I was really interested in your bio. You talked about how you sort of specialize in EMFs. And I know you sort of touched on that in the beginning of our conversation, but I just kind of wanted to discuss that a little bit more. And how EMFs and toxic mold, how does that affect the body? Is there a synergy or anything like that?
Kind of what I was talking about a little earlier. So you have the cell membrane, right? And it's electrical. And what happens with all these different toxins and molds and mycotoxins, Dr. Ray and I talked about it, is that you get an instability. And one of the things they've identified now with EMF, and Dr. Martin Paul has done a lot of research on this. If you go to ehtrust.org and 5gcrisis.com, you'll learn some more about that, or just Google Martin Paul. But what happens is the calcium gets influxed into the cell, and because the calcium channels are 7.6 million times more sensitive to EMFs than any part of the body. So it's been, FCC is basing everything on thermal effects, and all these non-thermal effects, they've kind of, doctors and scientists have all figured out. So that calcium influxes into the cell, and the magnesium is supposed to be high in the cell. And so it loses magnesium, and then it starts stimulating all these enzymes that creates more oxidative stress. And so, yeah, so that's what's happening. And now we know that, like, the COVID virus does the same thing. It makes these little viral porins and allows calcium to leak into that cell, and then there's that imbalance. So then you get these different nitric oxides that stimulate, and you get this huge cascade of events where the body even creates more free radicals and oxidative stress. And Dr. Bob Miller, I don't know if you guys have heard of Bob Miller, but he's been analyzing all of this. He's a PhD that looks at all these pathways, and it's interesting to see his work to show that. But the bottom line is the avoidance, and that's what Dr. East always say, getting that home environment is 75% of this, right? Getting that load down that your body so it's not reacting to so many things. And that I have found that to be helpful. That EMF reduction is just incredible.
So at its core, mold illness is basically a voltage-gated ion channelopathy, mm-hmm. and EMFs are affecting the voltage-gated channels.
And yeah, and I think that Dr. Rainey, I used to talk about this, the pesticides and herbicides, I think they're doing the same thing. You know, they're ionizing that membrane. And so we have our work cut out for us in terms of the environment, because we're, you know, getting hit with so much more in our world today.
Have you noticed the phenomenon of people who go into active denial of their situation, where it almost seems like their brain is being turned off? The more you try to draw to their attention, the more they rebel against the idea.
Now, are you talking about patients acting that way?
Yes.
I haven't really experienced that. Most patients that come here are ready to do, they've seen 10 to 12 doctors and they're not better. And they say, you know what? I'm so glad I caught here. I wish I'd come here sooner. I didn't know. So yeah, I haven't really experienced that, Eric.
So they've passed the threshold of what to do, and they've already decided. They know what they want.
Right. I think part of the problem with people that you're describing is that it's so overwhelming. And so they don't want to go there. You know, it's just too much to think about. And that's kind of, I remember when I was getting sick, that's kind of what I was thinking. Like, it's got to just be one thing, and then I'll fix that and I'll be okay. And then it can't be everything. And so, yeah, it's so overwhelming to people. And I think that's why they resist. A lot of it's fear.
Oh, I fought it as hard as I could. I did everything I could to hang on to my possessions, not have to avoid mold. So I can certainly understand that people don't want to go there.
Right. And it's interesting that you have something so like a tiny mycotoxin that can take you down. But, you know, the Navy, different military studies, you can look back, they've been, you know, studying this for warfare, same with EMFs since the 70s. So this is important.
Well, the peculiar thing about the Stachybotrys colonies in particular was how they could affect people in such a small range, so close proximity to the colony, that people who disturbed a colony or were working next to one could get sick, and people one room away they'd be fine. Have you seen any of that?
Not really. I've just seen people who are really sick.
A lot of people have the idea that if you test a house, that means the entire house is fine. But if you listen to patients, they'll complain about one room or one particular corner.
Yeah, I think one room will be usually the main affected area, but unfortunately, we tell patients, I'm not a big fan about mold plates and air levels, because the spores are not really a good test, because you've got these inflammagens, these tiny particles that make people sick, especially people who are more susceptible, and that gets into your HVAC and your air system. So, you know, it's really important to clean the whole area when you're doing a remediation, because those things can get spread out. And so, you know, and then you got the whole situation where people say, well, so-and-so in the house isn't getting sick. And Dr. Ray and I would always talk about that. And he said, you know, those people are being affected. The problem with people who aren't sensitive, so you take 100 people, 25 people are going to have symptoms that have the genetic predisposition where they're not processing this biotoxin, right? And so those are the people who get immediate symptoms and have all these problems. But the other 75 are like, I'm fine. Well, they're not really fine, because again, those mycotoxins are very damaging. So those are the people who, you know, I'm fine, and then they get a cancer. You know, so I always tell patients, it's a curse and a blessing to be sensitive, but you are feeling, you're like a canary in the mine. You're feeling the things that are causing this. You know, we have this huge epidemic of cancer. I mean, the 20-year-olds today who've grown up with Wi-Fi, that just came out. Dr. Deborah Davis just did a study in Annals of Gastroenterology, and the 20-year-olds are having a 4 times increase in rectal cancer and double colon cancer. And you think about it, all of them are wearing their phones. You've got the laptop on the lap. And so we're just, you know, this is just something that we need to really start paying attention to.
The other thing I'd like to touch on is that we're seeing evidence that the entire concept of testing for mold based on polymerase chain reaction might be inaccurate, because the mycotoxin fragments actually separate from the spores and they're floating around in the air as chemical fragments completely devoid of any DNA to measure.
Yeah, I can see that being very possible, especially when you talk to people that are sensitive, because they can go back into a house and there'd be nothing measured, and they smell it or feel it or something.
Exactly. This could account for the instances where tests come up negative and yet people are sick anyway.
I see that. But you know, one of the things I've learned is that if you keep getting rid of bringing down that total load, doing the saunas, and then desensitization has been super helpful, and then working on that limbic brain as you're doing all of this, that patients do improve and they can go back and be in a moldy environment and not get horribly sick. And so, you know, it just takes time, but the body knows what to do. You know, like I said earlier, just give it the right tools.
Yeah, my tolerance has increased so much that I'm going into the worst places, the ones that used to scare me to death, moving around quite like a normal person now. But good. People hear about avoidance, they become convinced that this is a pattern you're stuck in for the rest of your life and aren't aware of just how much avoidance can benefit you and get you back up higher on the power curve.
I agree. Yeah. And so people need to, as they get better, what I see a lot happen is the patients will get better and then they'll go right back into a pretty toxic environment for a long period and then have a little bit of a setback, and then they kind of panic. So I say, no, that's just a short lived thing. You've got the base, you know, your core is back to healthy. And so that's, again, working on that limbic brain.
Well, terrific. Thanks very much for talking to us.
Yeah.
Dr. McCarter, I had one question about your eco-friendly house.
Yes.
Can you tell us a few of the key things that you did that you felt were the most necessary to make it eco-friendly?
Okay, so one of the things I would encourage people to do is to test everything you're planning to use. Because some of the things that are, quote, green and supposed to be really helpful, I couldn't tolerate. So it's important to test everything. You can order samples, get a jar, put it in the jar, and make sure. And then I think it's important for future to make your house low EMF. And I did everything like Dr. A taught me. I did a rain screen wall, which now you can Google. There was Dr. Tang Lee out of Canada. He's an air quality engineer. And he was at a conference that Dr. A put on. And what he taught me is this rain screen wall, which is how I built my home. So you have your Tyvek and your inner wall, and then you have a space that you fur out, and then you put your siding on. So you have this constant airflow between your siding and your inner wall. And then you can, you know, put screens to keep bugs out. But it is a huge factor to help that evaporation so that moisture doesn't get into your inner walls. And then I used aircrete insulation. Now, in colder areas of the country, you probably can't do that. But aircrete is basically milk of magnesia. And it's, mold proof, and bugs, it does, you know, bugs don't like it. And so that was another big factor I used. I didn't, now in colder areas, you know, people use more hardwood floors. I would encourage people not to use the mimics and the different laminated floors, because they do emit a chemical for quite some time. So we always tell patients it's worth the money to go ahead and do the real hardwood floors. Avoid near your softwoods, because they have terpenes, and terpenes look just like a pesticide under the microscope, and patients are very sensitive to those. And so we tell patients, yeah, use the hardwood and nail them down. Don't glue them. You've got all the safe glues. AFM is a great company that has a lot of different products. And then there's a couple websites now. One's called Green Building Design, or Green Building Supply, and the Green Design Center. Those are good. And then you get, like I said, get samples, or just get one of the product and look at that. But it does pay off, because think about it, your body is then in this healing mode all the time because you're not reacting. And then the EMFs, I'm interested, there's a doctor, Brian Hoyer is a remediation expert. Peter Sirk is another one in California, the bowel biologist, because, you know, they're putting up all these satellites now that are emitting 4G and 5G. So I had originally was going to put a metal roof on my house, but I was metal sensitive. But Brian's working out a way to, you know, you do shielding paint, and people who are sensitive to the metals and EMFs, sometimes it re-radiates. So he's got a way to kind of layer that. So you have the metal roof or the metal side of the house, and then you have shielding paint on the next inner part of the wall to kind of block any resonance. So yeah, it's getting more interesting and complicated, but I think it'll pay off. That's one thing I've learned. You do it right, it'll pay off.
Dr. Tang Li did a fantastic study on a historic courthouse in Calgary.
Yes.
Back in 2004. And after many attempts to try to remediate this historic courthouse, they finally gave up, had to abandon the building, move the people to a new green building. And they were aware back in 2004 that they couldn't take any possessions with them. And the new construction couldn't be just normal construction. It had to be a green building.
Mm-hmm.
This was all the way back in 2004.
Well, you know, you all may be familiar with this. In the Bible, in Leviticus, the book of Leviticus, they had it all worked out. It says, you know, you go into this house, you try to clean it. If it's not any better, you're going to have to tear it down. You know, they had it all worked out then.
And the remediators who did the breaking up of the stones to carry it to an unclean place outside the city, they had to wash in the creek. They had to burn their clothes.
Wow.
They could not enter another house until after sundown. So basically, they understood the characteristics of spores, how they could be transported and contaminate a new house. They were fully aware of this in the Bible. It's amazing.
Isn't it? Yeah, our elders had wisdom. We need to remember that. You know, the older homes were all built with plaster, you know, and brick. And that's where we look at this two things. We've got all this, you know, drywall and changes in our building methods and this, you know, where we have everything completely sealed. So there's no ventilation. You know, it was all about energy conservation, and drywall is a perfect medium for molds, right? So that's a big problem. And now we've got all these natural disasters. You know, we've had 39 major disasters since 2016, hurricanes, flooding. So we are thinking, you know, we need to go back to what our ancestors did, you know?
And finding out that Stachybotrys is preloaded with mold spores is an absolutely horrific scenario. It's just a disaster waiting for some water to come along.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah.
Yeah, we had Dr. David Strauss on the other day, a microbiologist out of Texas Tech. He's retired now. And he was telling us that, like, all sheetrock produced has Stachy just sitting on on the boards, you know, just waiting for water. And so
exactly. A lot of patients come from apartments and condos, and they'll have painted over it. So a Stachy won't come up on your urine mycotoxin, but chytomium will. And that's always a big tip-off when I see that. I'm like, uh-oh. I bet you there's Stachy underneath that paint, you know, in that wall.
That's exactly what Dr. Campbell said, is that Stachybotrys is often overgrown with other mold, mm-hmm. and they'll detect the other mold and miss the Stachybotrys.
Correct.
And that just shows another testing limitation, you know, with all these companies that come in and check your home. And mm-hmm. what we see in our education groups is that a lot of people get so attached to their testing numbers. You know, oh, my numbers aren't too bad, but I'm suffering. But it's like, okay, well, you have to understand there are testing limitations to this.
Right.
It has been confirmed by, you know, many other people that have been working in the field of these limitations. And so,
yeah, Real Time Labs does a mycotoxin and mold test for homes. And then I like the ERMI and Hertz Me tests, where they look at the dust samples, you know, and those are much more, I think, helpful.
Well, thank you, Dr. McCarter. I just want to respectful of your time. And was there anything else that you wanted to talk about today or let our audience know?
Just encouraging people that with the right environment and you know, inch by inch, whatever you've got to do, you can continue to heal, and you're not crazy, and this is real, and that you can, you know, achieve wellness. People get so discouraged, and you know, mold, I used to notice that, you know, when people get into mold, they get very depressed and anxious. And if you're not an anxious person, don't let the doctor tell you that. I mean, you need to get to an environmental doctor, and you can get well. And so I just wanted to encourage people about that, and that we have a lot more tools today, too. Oh, I wanted to mention, I don't know if I already talked about this, but sauna and glutathione are very helpful. If you react to glutathione, then we need to work on some other things. But just doing that is helpful. And the diet, mold-free, yeast-free diet, because we are the bacteria that live in our gut. So the more you can do a mold-free diet, and basically, like a caveman, it's going to pay off. Your brain's going to be a little clearer, and you're going to be able to, you know, process and get more help.
Thank you so much for giving hope to our audience.
Thanks for interviewing me, because I think this is so helpful, you know, to help get awareness out there.
I mean, this is amazing. We'd love to have you on again in the future if you'd be willing, for sure. And also, I wanted to kindly ask you, would you be able to share these studies that you had pointed out in our conversation of the chronic fatigue syndrome and mycotoxins and also EMF studies?
Sure. The EMF studies, you can get a lot of that on that ehtrust.org. She's got all of those in 5G crisis. You just go under studies. It's ehtrust.org is fantastic. It's a wealth of info if you need to, you know, show people anything. And then I'll get you the study from Dr. Ray, Irma Ray. It's, yeah.
Perfect. We love sharing all the information, as much information as we can, to our listeners, because, you know, a lot of them don't get the help that they need. So thank you again, everyone, for being to us today. And thank you, Dr. Parker. She was fantastic. Please like, share, comment, and subscribe to our content. Also, check out our GoFundMe and Patreon pages to support us to keep this podcast going. Thank you again, and we'll see you guys next time.